friends panic. Let's identify the station before too long, because we must do that. This is KLRB FM in Carmel, serving you in stereo 24 hours a day. And this is Dialogue Conspiracy. With political research specialist Mae Brussel and asking questions is Phil Kogan, that's me. We were talking about the Watergate, and people who have been with us for the last half hour and the last year plus know what Dialogue Conspiracy is. We took time to explain it at the beginning of the half hour. For those of you who joined us, it's a program about politics and conspiracies, okay?
That's it.
Catch the beginning of the program next time, you get the full story. But Mae has done about 10 years of research into this subject, and she tears apart the news of the day and looks how it ties in with the past and how it affects the future. How's that for a summary?
Very good.
Okay.
I want to talk a little bit about the Sirhan family today, and also about the doctor that got in the archives to see the Kennedy x-rays, because that's really a historic first. But we'll wind up.
Have we dispensed with the Watergate then?
Well, there's a few things that are important about the Watergate. It's hard to dispense with it because there's so much in the news.
Well, I just meant for the week.
I think the important thing this week to keep. A lot of people may wonder what's so important about setting up bugging devices, or what if they were snooping. You know, it's a federal crime, or it's a crime in the District of Columbia. But beyond that, why is it such an issue? Why is it going to make the news? Why is it going to be out more? Why did McGovern say 2 weeks ago that everywhere I go, everywhere I speak, I'm going to be speaking about the Watergate Hotel? I think the reason he's saying that is that deep down in McGovern's mind and certain people's minds, this is going to be the most important story in the United States. And it isn't just a question of getting secrets or conversation on other persons. If they scrape this case open, you'll see the inner workings of that second government, that hidden government. The agents that were involved, the men arrested, were all involved in the CIA, with the CIA for many years, lawyers for the CIA, writer for the CIA, and plannies. The Bay of Pigs invasion, all these, the men arrested, the five that were arrested at the Watergate Hotel June 17th were involved in the Bay of Pigs operation, which was such a disgrace to the United States and the worst thing the CIA had done. And yet, 11 years later, the same men as a team are working to do something to the electoral process in 1972, and it couldn't just be gathering information.
What was it then?
Well, my conspiratorial view of history is that it involved overthrowing the government, blaming a certain amount of violence on radicals, and taking martial law.
And the Democratic Party? The actual purpose of having the equipment in the Democratic Party headquarters.
Well, they could have planted evidence. They could have planted the devices in there that took conversation and then sent people in who are registered Democrats who are sitting in the office talking about how they're going to kill Nixon. Just like they have a tape recording in Miami of a man saying how Kennedy was going to be killed 3 weeks later. You take a high-powered scope. So you think the man was involved.
Why would it have to be within Democratic Party headquarters? If they wanted to have a tape of Democrats, registered Democrats, talking about killing the President of the United States, they could make that tape anywhere and say it was recorded there.
Well, because they could be seen removing something. They could say, well, these tapes came or somebody took them out. They found out the place was bugged and here's these tapes. What do they have on them? I think they could plant information that would make it look like the Democrats were involved in the murder. And because every one of these other murders, political assassinations, has been so well concealed and made it look like the other side, starting with Oswald, who they said was a communist, who never had anything to do with communists. And there was so much stuff planned. There were magazines in his garage and subscriptions that started coming after he was dead to the Daily Worker and things that he didn't even know about when he was alive or didn't even see. Well, why did they bother having all this stuff available so that as soon as he was dead, they rounded it all up and said, look, he's a communist. See, just in October before the assassination, he called a man in Houston and said the man's name he traced to a magazine subscription, the worker, the socialist that came to his mailbox. And Oswald found out the man's name who had taken care of the subscription. He says, why did you do that? Somebody had told the man to get a subscription for Oswald, send it to his box. And Oswald was furious on the way to Mexico. He calls this man's wife, you know, the man, merchant seaman who was away, and he said, why did he send that stuff to my box? What is it? You see, he was beginning to receive this left-of-center literature, and he didn't even know what it was about. And after he was dead, then Postmaster Holmes said, oh, there's nothing in his box but this Daily Worker. Then at the house where he lived at Michael and Ruth Payne, they said, well, oh, he got these magazines, but I didn't open them. Well, Michael Payne had security clearance and designed helicopters at Bell Aerospace, and they would certainly know if there's communist literature coming to the house. And the garage then was supposed to be full of it. Never fingerprinted to see if Oswald held it. So you go to great lengths to plant stuff. There was an application for him to the Civil Liberties Union, and he'd never been to a meeting or anything. It was found in New York. Never checked the fingerprint or handwriting to see if somebody else sent in the application for him, so they could bring in all these organizations after he's dead. So you could have people in the Democratic headquarters making conversations, and later come across a routine thing and find these tapes. Oh, this is who did it. See, I think that they could easily plant this stuff like they planted it in Oswald.
You know, you mentioned before about the audit of the campaign funds.
Oh, the books,
of course,
yeah.
The audit came about, I think, after the Watergate, and it was when the question arose where the money came from, and it was pointed out that some of it had been traced back to the reelection fund.
Yes, because in addition to looking into that $89,000 that Bernard Barker had in Miami, and he was the conduit of funds for the Bay of Pigs invasion, he was holding $89,000 from that Mexican bank that he checked out in $100 bills shortly before the Watergate affair. He also had a deposit there for $25,000. So they wanted to find out where that came from, and that came directly from the committee to reelect the president in Washington. It didn't go to Mexico first. But it was handed to Marie Stans, former Secretary of Commerce, and there's an article in the paper this week, Thursday, that the GOPs are blocking the audit report. That it said a last-minute telephone plea stopped release for the moment of a federal investigation of the Republican campaign.
A phone call from who?
It doesn't say. The General Accounting Office, it says final plea from Marie Stans, Secretary of Commerce and President Nixon's chief fundraiser. And they flew down, the investigators flew to Miami Beach with the report while the convention was going on. And it says Washington newspapers have already printed stories saying the report is highly critical of handling the Republican funds. Now, this goes back to the beginning of the program of Nixon, the secret agent, the slush funds. He has this secret $10 million. Now they've come across extra money, and they're supposed to reveal the source of that money. And they've opened up the office, and just since April 7th, because the first $10 million was secret, and they have found a large amount of money. There's $500,000 that they reported right away of the Nixon money that they said was mishandled. But there's $100,000 campaign security money from which $25,000 was taken into the bank account. There was $200,000 in unreported expenditures. There was another $100,000 in campaign security. This is from Bob Woodward, the L.A. Times. And it said an examination of the court papers reveals that a federal prosecutor told the attorney G. Gordon Liddy, who was a White House aide and the former attorney for the Nixon Committee, that the jury has enough evidence for a felony indictment against Liddy. So
why isn't... That's a fairly unbelievable. I'm looking at this story here, which is from the Mercury, Washington Bureau, San Jose Mercury. I don't know how people can sit there with the investigation is of the Republican Party, and here the Republican Party, a Republican member of the Nixon cabinet, has blocked the release of the report. And I don't know how people can sit there and possibly defend something like that.
Well,
I'm speaking now as a commentator, not a newsman. And as a citizen, but it sounds very suspicious.
Well, as a citizen, Phil, how do you feel? I'm reading the story of this attorney up in San Jose this week who's being tried for murder. He shot that young fellow, he thought was a trespasser, and he murdered him. And they were doing some ballistics, and they tried to show that the bullets recovered didn't match the gun that he had. You know, here's a man in San Jose who isn't well-known, who's defending himself on ballistics evidence, and when you think that they didn't even do that with the Robert Kennedy or the Martin Luther King murder, the John Kennedy match, the bullets. I'm reading the testimony of criminalists in San Jose, and when they get away with actual murder cases where they don't use the bullets and things, they block it on the murder of a civil rights leader, a president, a senator. this is what I've cried all along. I've seen them block this. You know, we've done this show, you know, maybe it's for 6 months, and I talk endlessly about that. Why aren't the citizens outraged at the blocking of the handling of criminal evidence, where a man goes to isolate to prison, like James Ray, who's isolated, or Sirhan? These people are isolated on the evidence that doesn't even line up that they did the murders.
Well, now
you're talking about funds they're blocking. So.
Now I'm speaking just now from a personal comment, and for people listening now, they can discard it as being just personal opinion. But in my personal opinion, when we're talking about these things, some of the evidence which is not followed up, some of the interference which is reported, it's in the paper for people to read. Here, the headline in the Mercury, the Grand Old Party blocks the campaign audit report.
Grand Old Party.
From a personal standpoint, I think, and from what I've found since I've been in the news business, is that the American public as a whole has an unswerving loyalty to the presidency and to the government. And the real danger, again, I'm speaking from personal opinion, is to the government, is those who do not question that blind faith, that the blind faith of people that the American flag is always flying in the right direction. That is the danger. It's the people who don't question. It's the people who accept everything at face value as it's written out for them. That are really the greatest danger to the country.
Well, this is what the program's all about, really, isn't it?
Well,
I've been
think
questioning
so.
For 10 years, and we have an opportunity on the radio to show how the system, like week after week, I talk about the way things are covered up or handled. People don't question. And here they say they block it. And what is worse, it says a series of resignations came from the committee after the grand jury began investigating. Now, that means there has to be some guilt. These men are resigning like there's no tomorrow. I have a list here of the men who've stepped down, been fired, or are going to be investigated, left their jobs. I mean, from John Mitchell on down, you know, this is former attorney general. It says the General Accounting Office said it will release the report shortly. It is the financial investigation arm of the federal government, and it goes down and asks Maurice Stans what he thinks.
And he's involved in the re-election. He's a Nixon administration member, cabinet member. It just smells wrong.
Yeah,
I mean, even if there's nothing to it, it smells wrong, and for that reason alone, people should be questioning. That's the thing. I've issued this challenge many times. There are those people who listen to a Dialogue Conspiracy once, and they hear some of these far out conclusions and some incredible questions asked. And with you sitting here now, I'll say, May, that everything you say isn't true. I'm sure. But everything one person says is never true. But you ask questions, and you ask for answers that oftentimes are delivered months or years later.
And they're
but
not,
at least you're asking, but nobody is challenging you.
I ask these questions, and none of them, in this way, I'm not saying they're all true.
Wrong before. I mean, things you have said have turned out differently, or they appear to have been turned out differently.
Well, what if I say there's going to be provocations at the convention, and then 2 weeks later, earlier, the men are locked up? That was unforeseen, that this bloodshed would stop. I've been wrong on that kind of thing because we didn't get the bloodiness we would have gotten if those men hadn't, they were hiring provocateurs,
okay.
and that kind of thing.
But what I'm saying is that you have asked questions. What you have done is really not that much more than a person with the same resources and taking the enormous amount of time that you've taken could do themselves. I mean, you've pored over a newspaper and magazine articles. You have phoned people, written letters by the dozen. But you're not using secret evidence here. What you're simply doing is trapping people in their own inconsistencies by seeing what they say on one day, what they say on the next day. And if a person is lying, they inevitably get caught up in those lies. But again, what I've said before is that for people listening now who hear this, who are, I would hope some of them are loyal Nixon supporters or loyal Republicans, that they listen to this, and if they can't refute it, or if they can't explain why this is all right, then they should start questioning.
Well, there's an article.
Everybody should question.
The Washington Post had an article this week says state GOP charges bungling and the showdown with the Nixon aides. It said angry Republican state chairman today demand a showdown with the White House officials. Now, you see, this is why I say Nixon isn't a Republican. They're simply furious, all the Republicans, see, because Nixon is controlled by the Central Intelligence Agency and the funding of this secret government, that secret $10 million, and the things that have put Nixon into power all of his life are not part of the mainstream Republican Party. And the wiretapping issue in Miami came up, and there, this article says there were complaints from every segment of the Republican Party. And even Dole from Kansas said, what we've got to do is find out who's in charge. Is it Haldeman of the White House? Who is running that place? And it's this is an article about dissatisfaction with Maurice Stans, the financial chairman. Money not going out to the Republican Party, people running for office. And they want to know what is happening. One lighthearted moment, it said, Dole said he didn't know why anyone would be interested in wiretapping the Democratic committee. He said, in my office, I have a case of Pepsi-Cola, old posters, and two busts of Eisenhower. And they want to know what's going on, why these men are doing this, what caused them the embarrassment, who was doing all this. See, they can't figure out what they wanted or why they were there.
But they pretty well admit that there is a Republican Party tie-in.
Oh, yes, but there's a book I'm just reading now by Whalen called Catch a Falling Flag, and it's about the Republican Party. He was in the Republican Party always and feels that the Republicans are left out of the scene and that Nixon is controlled by this inner circle of Haldeman and Ehrlichman and that team and that they can't get to him and that the government is falling apart because of this secret group. And I think this whole team of secret men that was arrested or connected to the Watergate is that extreme right-wing group, the behind-the-scene group, the same kind that secretly put Hitler into power and then appeared. There was another article that fits in with the research that I've done and what Tackwood said that said GOP aide says the funds were used to study radicals. Now, I said in the article in The Realist, we'll give the address, too, before we go off the air. If you want to subscribe or you can come in the station and pick up a copy, you can tell them about that, Phil. But this has to do with the Tackwood allegations about radicals and coming down on radicals, having martial law, and Nixon taking full control of the government. Members of the campaign staff of Nixon are saying that G. Gordon Liddy, again, and this team were studying radicals. Well, James McCourt was on an emergency contingency group to study radicals. You see
the
that?
The state of California studied radicals. Here on the station, we had an article based on a California Council on Criminal Justice study of the radicals in the colleges and universities of California. It was a specific California study.
Yeah, but this study was in quotes to study radicals. You know, the plan was to hire radicals and get provocateurs going, you know, and then come down with violence. And I don't know if you read anything.
This GOP aide says this was to
study the radicals. Yeah, Gordon.
And you're saying that the plan was to hire the radicals. Well, that's what Squad 19 was
yes,
about.
Yes, that's right.
According to.
Well, this is what the Tackwood's
articles.
Because the GOP aide said that Gordon Liddy was working with radicals. What to do? This is a quote. If the crazies made an attack on the president. Gordon Liddy worked in the White House with Howard Hunt, and he was the attorney for the Finance Committee. And these men that had the explosives, the Time magazine talks about that were going to do provocations, violence down there in Miami. They were all related together, and the emergency contingency unit of Squad 19 that James McCord belonged to, it's discussed in the Washington Post again, that they were to find out what to do with the crazies if they attacked the president. Now, that takes care of the radicals, and it takes care of the president. And again, you end up with Agnew. You see, what's surfacing as the Watergate keeps going on is you are going to find that this group are the work of the CIA that tie in with the past political assassinations.
And do you think that they actually, you've said on past programs and today also that Squad 19 was involved in hiring people to cause trouble at the convention, that the Watergate people had money in the bank that would be used for that purpose, supplying arms and weapons and paying people off. First of all, there's a two-part question. First, do you think that the discovery of these five men within the Democratic headquarters halted any further work on that? And second, do you think that the trouble this week at the convention, although it was smaller, may have been instigated by some of the people who had already been paid off and had already had their plans delivered to them, and that they represented only a portion of those who would have been to work had the Watergate not occurred?
Yeah, well, I could answer that. I brought in some articles about the news clippings of the mass arrest this week. And the one of the people they mentioned was Senator James Buckley, was escorted in the hall after he was surrounded by people who shouted, "Murder, murder." Well, Buckley was the one who recommended Howard Hunt to the White House, you know, and Hunt was the man who two men arrested the Watergate had his name. Hunt has been sought for. He was questioned by the FBI after the arrest. He is either out of the country or hasn't been seen since June. The men that were mentioned in the newspaper this week in terms of violence at the convention were three men directly involved with the Watergate affair. One was Carlos Prio Siqueiros, the former Cuban president. The other was Reverend Carl McIntyre. One was Buckley. Carl McIntyre is a liaison between Charles Colson. I'm throwing out names here, but I want to show that the link of the Watergate Hotel to the provocateurs appeared in our news this week, the very people that they were quoting.
Okay, explain how.
Explain how McIntyre... Well, the behind the Watergate, if these four men were the ones that were going to hire the paid provocateurs, they had close friends. The two men at the Watergate Hotel had the name of Howard Hunt.
Okay.
Hunt was hired, supposedly, by Charles Colson in the White House. Hunt was 21 years with the CIA, had a desk in the White House with the walkie-talkies and the gun at the time of his arrest. But Colson works with the CIA. He was formerly with the OSS, and he's the liaison of the extreme right wing to the White House. He brought Carl McIntyre to Washington for the pro-Vietnam marches. He works with Premier Key. He works with Agnew. He is the very right-wing liaison member of the White House that reaches Richard Nixon.
What is his upfront job, his public job?
A consultant to the White House. And he is the liaison who makes the arrangements. He made him for Key to come here and speak, and that was canceled. He arranged for Carl McIntyre. So here is Colson's friend McIntyre giving a press interview at the time. The scuffles down there that were quoted in the press were with James Buckley, Carlos Prio Siqueiros, and Carl McIntyre. Now, those three men had direct links to Watergate men, and they were quoted in the news as having scuffles with provocateurs. And
well, were these provocateurs? You say they
these
are provocateurs.
Yeah.
And they were told specifically to...
Well, these weren't provocateurs that lined up with the team to make a scene of what it's like, you know, what the scuffling young ruffians around the country... Then it's very coincidental that the people who chose to attack were these three men. That has to be really a wild coincidence that all the instances that were quoted over our wire service, over the AP service here, were just happened to bump into the men mentioned in the Watergate thing.
Well, you haven't really answered my question, though,
yeah.
Although the question about do you think that the fact that the Watergate occurred... meant that there were some people who had been paid off and had arrangements made of what they were to do, and the fact that the Watergate kind of blew that there were some that couldn't be
stopped. There would be thousands of more. Yeah, there would have been a lot of killings. There would have been violence.
That's your contention.
My contention is that lives were saved by the hundreds. Well, even Time Magazine, talking about the ammunition, that their intent was to bomb. You don't bomb. What do you bomb? There were going to be people inside those buildings, you know. And... my contention is that lives were saved at the Democratic Convention and the Republican Convention because the paid provocateurs were there. The plans had to be called off. The plans were exposed publicly. I know that the copy that we got out of The Realist was sent right early in August, the first last week of July, about the 1st of August. All the newspaper people, a lot of people in Washington had copies. And if you're writing a blueprint of how it's going to happen, most of it has to be called off. They couldn't possibly do it that way. They may do it another time, another place. But if you blueprint, that's one reason we wanted to get the article out.
We covered a lot of ground, and we've run out of time. I was going to say we're running out, but we've run out of time. We should mention The Realist. Last week we mentioned that there would be copies of The Realist available here at the station, and we ran out. People came down right after the program, even though we said we weren't open.
There's some here now.
We've got some more copies in, and if you can afford the 50 cents, somebody's got to pay for these copies. May is paying for them right now out of her pocket. And so if you can afford the 50 cents...
Or Paul Krasner,
the publisher. If you can afford the 50 cents, come on by and pick up a copy. Please come by Monday, if at all possible. a subscription is $3 a year to The Realist and the Conspiracy Newsletter, which will be, when's it coming out, May?
As soon as I sit down and write it.
As soon as she sits down and write it. That's $6 to subscribe. It's twice a month. But those who would like to read the articles on how Richard Nixon came to power and the real meaning of the Watergate, as well as all the other usual material that you find in The Realist, come by and pick up. It's the August 72 issue of The Realist. It'll be here at the station.
And they can subscribe. A lot of people, last week somebody asked the address. Do you have time to give it?
The address is The Realist, Department 93, Box 379, Stuyvesant Station, New York, New York, 10009. I'll read it once again. Oh, yeah, I think we have time for that. It's The Realist, Department 93, Box 379, Stuyvesant Station, Stuyvesant Station, New York, New York, 10009. So there you go.
Okay.
That's the Dialogue Conspiracy for this Saturday. And we're out of time. We're also going to be out of town now. And we'll be back next week, God willing, and Spiro. This has been Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. If you have questions that you want answered on future programs or any comments, write Dialogue Conspiracy, KLRB, Box 3904, Carmel, California, 93921. I'm Phil Kogan.
There goes Phil Kogan with Dialogue Conspiracy. We're back with music. I'm Steve Seaweed. Music till 9 o'clock tonight. You're listening to KLRB FM in Carmel. I'd like to tell you about a new feature that the station...